This week on The Droids, episode 7 of Andor, the announcement. It was quite an announcement made to the entire galaxy, and we're announcing right here that we loved it. All that and more on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, I am Mike. And Chris, have you booked your plans to that beach destination Star Wars planet after this week's episode?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, ready for the tunes, and I'm ready for some droids on the beach.
If they aren't building Galaxy's Edges on every beach in this country, in this world, honestly. What a goldmine that could be. Just start building vacation spots based on each planet.
If they just change the politics of the way that things were enforced on those beaches, I think it could be a place we'd all want to go.
I don't know how much fun we're going to have there, but
I think that was a struggle.
I wouldn't mind post-Endor kicking back with a little moof milk, if you know what I mean.
You know what? We've seen a lot of blue milk so far. We haven't seen any moof milk.
One thing in the Star Wars universe that they will never let go.
But it is amazing to me how it's normalized or every day, because it was every day from the beginning. The first time we see it in A New Hope is very every day. And they kind of brought it back within this because they're not winking to it. It's just on the table with his cereal.
It's funny that he's eating cereal with the blue milk. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, Cyril and your cereal. Every week. You know, there's a lot to unpack in this episode. It's not the episode 6 of obviously all of the dramatic conclusion of what we saw in episode 6. But this episode 7 is dense. It is deep. Yeah. There's a lot happening, a lot of motion in this.
Yeah.
And once again, the internal politics of the Empire have me completely engrossed. I want to see these tyrannical leaders at each other's throats.
Yeah. It's like watching a train wreck where it's a kind of a sick fascination of how does this happen? How does this turn? The gears are starting to churn, Mike, and it's kind of exciting to watch, but in that bad way.
Well, and I love that there's the differing of opinions of like, as with any scrum for power and fight for power, you're going to have those who believe they know the right way to do it and those who don't, and they're going to go back and forth and they're going to pit each other against one another and find out who's the one who's going to come out on top.
What's the most evil way to do this? That's kind of where they're at right now.
But that's the thing. They're not a caricature, and we're just diving into the episode. They're not a caricature of evil. They are. Some are pragmatic. Some are maybe somewhat apathetic. Some are expecting that their power is enough, that they don't need to do more. It's all really intriguing to watch the different variances of how they approach evil.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're starting to see the many sides of the Empire and kind of them. It's neat to see them a little vulnerable, which we don't usually get. I mean, we got some of that in Clone Wars, and we started to kind of understand their tyrannical rule and now it's like the idea of what's legal and what's illegal. It's like they're this kind of move to absolute power. And they're really just playing the card of the rebels. But it's kind of that sad fact that in order for this revolution to happen, they have to kind of push their hand to the max. Like they have to essentially make the Empire as evil as kind of the prophecy foretells.
Well, I mean, honestly, as evil as we've seen dictatorships within the real world, making decisions of, you know, when they're early on in this episode, and we're diving in, like we said, you know, obviously follow us across all of social,
DroidsPod,
email us, DroidsPod, and then Chris, you call it out at the end of the episode, but we got to call it out at the beginning. Rate and review us on iTunes.
Oh, please.
If you love us, if you are our opposite imperial nemesis, please also rate and review
us. We'd love to hear any kind of review. I mean, we literally every morning... Here's what I do. I wake up, big yawns, make the Chewbacca noise. We all do it when we do the stretch. Kind of big stretch.
Yep.
I get my little cup of warm moof milk, not blue milk. And I sit by the computer a little cozy wise and I click open iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever it is now, and I look for a review. And guess what, Mike? Haven't seen one in a while. Mm-hmm. So if you, who knows, maybe there's a bonus. This is not a promise of anything, but maybe if you leave a review, maybe something could happen.
Hey, you know what? Honestly, we've talked stickers. About it on this podcast before. No, we've got an R2-D2 full $100+ set sitting this in this closet next to me.
This is true.
We will choose one review in the next month before Andor ends. One review will be randomly selected to win that R2-D2 shipped to you at no cost to you. We're going to send it out. Rate and review us on iTunes, and we will pick one review. And if it is just one review, you might write that review, and you might be the only one and get the R2-D2.
Guess what? You just got a Lego R2. It's a blast to build, too. I have that. I built it earlier this year, and they make a little light kit you can get for it. I'm thinking about doing that.
I like that. I like that, Chris.
It's got lots of little secrets in it.
Before I was getting into this promo, I was talking about how they were using real-world techniques of dictatorships to be like, oh, no, any single action anyone takes is now a class one felony. Right. Oh, if you have a party for your planet and somehow rebels do something, you're all under arrest. Like, it is that sweeping generalization of how do you stamp out revolution? Well, everything's a crime. But then that in itself turns into another moment to drive more revolutionaries to become revolutionaries, such as our good boy Cassian Andor, who is he part of it? Well, not part of it, but you're making him part of it.
Yeah.
You're turning him into be part of it.
Yeah. I think we're starting to see what drives one into revolution. I mean rebellion. That's what's going on here. This is the rebellion of the people of the galaxy, I guess, right?
Well, exactly. And Chris, we had the last episode we were talking about at the end where Cassian made his decision to kill Skeen where was he in his state of things? Okay, the decision was I'm taking my cut and I'm out of here, but yet he still did the right thing to not have the millions be taken away from the rebellion. But I think in this episode, it made a lot more clear to me about who he is than the end of the last episode, because now it's all like, oh, I get now why he did what he did in the end of the last episode, because he's still looking out for himself. He's still not bought into making decisions and doing things in the interest of the galaxy and the rebellion, because he still thinks that he can live a life separate from it.
Yes.
And this episode shows us that he can't. Yes. And Marv is trying to tell him that as well, and he's not listening.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think he's hit at that. There's points in your life where things align. And I think at this point in time, I think when he goes back, quote unquote, home, I think he realizes that, like, sure, he might benefit from taking his mother figure, like, off the planet and go. But it's kind of like she's almost like a symbol of, hey, if I'm going through this and I have the ability to change it, I think this is going to be happening all over the galaxy. And then he's coming to this realization of there's something greater than here and the way he was raised and things like that. I mean, I thought that whole conversation was just, that was just an awesome kind of turn.
For the character. He inspired his mother to get more involved, or his, you know, adoptive mother, to get involved in the fight, but wasn't inspiring himself. Like, his own actions showed her that she could stand up for herself. And yet he still isn't bought in. And
It took I think he didn't understand the ramifications of his actions. And it's such a cool character study in that respect, where it's like he is not doing this for some kind of greater altruism other than he just wanted money and he wanted to get out of Dodge and just go live his own life. I mean, we've seen this in Star Wars before. I mean, the classic example, Han Solo.
and Finn.
Exactly.
I said Marv, you know, kind of like Joe Pesci in Home Alone. I meant Marva.
Marva.
Marv!
Harry!
Harry, what happened to your face? Well, let's
get them in the Star Wars universe.
Oh, I think they could fit. Yeah, I think
they'd
we could
ripe,
see.
Ripe to be a couple of thief droids.
Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot. Wouldn't that be a great way to bring them back as voice actors doing Home Alone in the Star Wars universe?
Yeah.
I think that would make
sense.
And
then we can have Andor, like the Wonder Years version of Andor when he's like a little kid.
Yeah, I like it. That's great. All right, let's go take a step back. We already kind of jumped around this episode a bit. There's a lot to kind of like follow up on. And Chris, you and I talked about maybe there's a time jump. Maybe there's a year time jump. Looks like we're not getting any time jump in this season. Maybe next season is going to be a lot of time jumps. But I don't mind that. This keeps going. It's amazing.
Not at all. And I heard somewhere early on, I think we all heard, that it was kind of going to be in these like 3-episode chunks.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's almost like the way the show is sequenced in these chunks. It's not necessarily like, oh, this is like a separate story, this is a separate story. It's almost like, okay, this episode kicks off the next three, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to see kind of what this empirical rubber stamp court does to Andor.
Yeah.
And then that'll probably resolve, and then that'll kick off the next thing, which I think is a very good way to do the show. And it's also like keeping it moving. There's no like middling or fumbling around.
No, I'm so excited by every episode, and I don't feel like anything's wasted. And I really love that we are seeing the next steps and the ramifications of what just happened in the last, like Vel's in this episode. We see what Cinta's doing.
Yeah.
She's trying to get off of the planet on Aldani. You know, there's more. We're not leaving too many things left unsaid, and part of that is like you'd expect a lot of shows would leave, like if we did 6 episodes here, it's like, all right, well, there's a lot of cliffhangers. When are we going to see people? What happened to them? No, we're just continuing onward and seeing more.
But
this episode begins with Cyril, and ever since episode 3, Cyril had his moment. He lost everything that he had. He saw the explosion. He was overwhelmed. Wasn't ready for this for his rank and what he was trying to do, and now we are slowly seeing the, I guess, downfall and his de-evolution of his life, where he's just more and more middling and more down to minimal like impact,
right?
The opposite of what he wants to be doing, and it's this through line through this episode. We can just talk about his story real quickly
because
it's pretty much we get what 3 scenes.
Yes.
Of him,
he's
with his mother talking again about the opportunity. He hears about what happens on Aldani. You can see his anger that goes with it, and then he's going to find out about this role in whatever he's doing in data entry, basically.
Yeah,
and his life seems to start to be blending into the thousands of others who have some role in Coruscant, but not much else.
It's almost kind of like the inverse storyline of Andor to a degree.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like he wants to be this revolutionary rebellion guy, but we're talking from the conservative sense. We're talking from the opposite viewpoint.
Yep.
And he tried to start real big and got burned. People weren't ready for it yet. I mean, the Empire wasn't there yet, and now we start to see this shift because of the actions of Andor and gang, who's left. And now we see that kind of spawn. So now Cyril's kind of like, did I say Cyril? I think I just said Cyril.
No, you said Cyril.
Cyril. He's kind of like, oh, these idiots, they have no idea what's coming. I was right all along. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't found that place yet. And I think maybe his new job's going to afford him this ability to kind of move through the ranks. He's taking advantage of his privilege. He's taking it. You know what I mean? He's like, all right, well, I have to do this. But he's like, this won't last long because soon the real empire will start to rule, and I'll be back. I'll be back there. Like, he's biding his time, but doing what he can.
Chris, did your mom ever have any comments about your collar and what it was saying about you?
Every single day I would go out. No, never like that. That's harsh. I feel like they're trying to like give us a little empathy for the character of how could someone turn. And you know what I mean? Like, I feel like this guy's under constant scrutiny from his mother. But you know what? That's no excuse. That's not.
Yeah. Well, so we see him, and then he goes kind of on his interview. He's still harboring this.
Yes.
Anger and this need for control.
He's an angry man.
And you see him just wanting to put any of the rebels in the right place, or in what he deems their proper place.
He's waiting. Yeah, he's waiting for his moment. He's like one of those guys that's probably like looking for it.
Well, kind of like the way these episodes, you're right. He's definitely looking for it. And I think that's the thing. I think what we're going to see is he's not going to settle in. And what he'll do is he'll take his own, because he'll either find some bit of detail that will remind him that Cassian is out there and maybe he was part of this. And I imagine he'll take it on himself to continue to search for him with the hope that if he were to find him and potentially turn him in, or, you know, obviously right now we know he's just been captured, but if he were to do something that would benefit the Empire or benefit someone, that he could get out of his new station in life, because that's going to be what seems like his only mission. Because this episode has set him up for what could be a lifetime of really irrelevancy, because he will not be a position of power at all.
Oh my gosh, did you see? I mean, it looked like the Imperial Senate with the amount of tables and chairs and seats. Like, it was nuts.
Well, and it really, they did a beautiful job of, you're starting in tight on him, you're seeing his eyes as he kind of darts back and forth on the screen, he's doing his job searching through it, and then it's like cut by cut by cut, it gets wider and wider and wider, and exactly. Everyone is the same.
You realize
everything is the same.
Yep, he's just going to be this intergalactic pencil pusher. It all becomes red tape, paper, just, it's all, it becomes just so muddled in bureaucracy that it's like, what can possibly be done in this galaxy? But that's good, because it keeps the masses busy.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing, you almost like, you root for the villain to have their own comeuppance and their consequences.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the worst torture that could be imaginable for this character.
Oh my gosh,
it's so much worse than if he had just been killed, or if he was impoverished.
His doomed fate. He was on the cusp of being on the security team task force company, and he was there. In his mind, he served the higher cause because of that. He was so close to the Empire, but now he's like being pushed back to this just minuscule role. But I'm sure he'll say, like, this is my duty and my service to serve the Empire again.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, or any force that he indeed can like assert their power. I think that's what he wants to do. Interesting note just for this episode. It's written by Stephen Schiff, who was one of the main writers and creators of The Americans, which is a show that I absolutely love.
Oh, big fan over here. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Which, it's just kind of incredible to think about the writers and the quality of the staff on this. He's not one of the creators. He was a writer. He wrote many episodes, but he was not one of the creators.
Yeah. I mean, we just keep falling back to, this is such well-written story from just separate from Star Wars. I mean, it's just such well-made storytelling from a verbal standpoint and visually too. I was just talking to somebody about just how, like, it's exciting because every episode we learn new things. And I think I've said this almost every single episode we've reviewed, but it is still exciting from that aspect. And they're keeping up that pace. And the Americans very much the same, like that, where it's you kind of know the overarching plot point, that the Americans example is like, okay, they're Russian spies or Soviet spies. But we don't know to what degree or how they have to do stuff and things like that. That's what makes these shows so interesting, is that these little details that we learn how they live and operate in everyday life is something that, it's what made the original trilogy so much fun. It's what made the prequels so much fun and part of the sequel trilogy. It's just like, you get those little details and they do it so sparingly, but enough that it's like, it makes it so much more engrossing and just rich.
Which, credit to the production designer on this, because I think we need to huge tip of the Loathcat to the production designing team.
Giant.
And look, we know it's shot at Pinewood. We know it's shot in the UK. It's got all of the classic bells and whistles, but they're making those choices, like you talked about, the little things that are just really building out
just
the world.
The TVs and like...
Kind
of they've gone back a little bit to kind of like, hey, if this was 1980, what would this look like? Or, you know what I mean? Like, if this was 1985, what would a vision of the future look like?
Without a featurette telling us that's exactly what they were doing.
Like, they don't need to do that. It's just they're picking up the visual language that's been developed over the last 25 years.
Yeah. The production designer. Oh, you know what? I do remember Tony Gilroy talking about this. Luke Hull, is the production designer.
Okay.
And in one of the interviews that Tony Gilroy gave, he basically said, like, Luke Hall, you better watch out for him everywhere because he's coming to just dominate the industry.
Man, I mean, he's just making, just visually, the show is so just appealing and just, but it's all motivated and it makes sense. And that's like, that's the Star Wars stuff that's like the best. And the other shows, they're great, and they have these aspects as well, and they use this, but sometimes they use it almost as a crutch. Like, they don't, they're too focused on bringing back what we've already seen instead of showing a new side of what can be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. And without a doubt, Chris, which bringing back something we've seen, Wolf Uralin, I can't even know how to say his name, is the new commander, the commander that we see in the addressing all of the Imperial officers at the ISB. He is Wolf from Clone Wars, and he was also in A New Hope. And so you're bringing back a character, but here's how it's done. It's not like fanfare. We don't even get anybody saying his name in the episode. It's just you learn it in the credits that this is a character that we've seen before, and yet here he is addressing the entire group. He's the high commander of the ISB and talking about how they're changing their plans and why they work so hard and what they're going to do to bring peace now and how they're changing their approach following this moment from the rebels. And I love how many tight shots you saw of the faces of the other Imperial officers. Again, the casting in this, even just from a face casting standpoint, is beautiful
to see
the reactions on them. But then we get our first mention of Palpatine. And it's a Palpatine where I like this is the way that we could possibly interface with the old movies and the original series. Mention them in the distance. Mention that they're there. Mention that there's a way that they're impacting things.
Acknowledge. I did not know this, the wolf fact. I was kind of on my phone looking this up as you were saying it. I mean, that's such a cool detail. And yeah, why not bring in some of these guys? I mean, the roster is deep when it comes to that stuff. We got the Palpatine reference. I mean, I think that's probably as far as it'll go. I don't think we're going to get like a set piece Palpatine view.
I hope not.
Maybe a glimpse in the Senate. It could happen. Or
glimpse is fine.
We don't need a scene where it's like him and Darth Vader chatting.
Well, but it's also because like I'm fascinated by Dedra. I want to spend time with Dedra, and I want to spend time with Dedra and her eyes against Bliven. I want her to continue to stare down that other officer
and
just endlessly. I don't want more time
with
the
Emperor
right now.
They're doing a great job right there too, just kind of like who's the mole kind of thing.
The
back and forth there, it keeps making you think each one has a different kind of disguise they're wearing maybe for evil intentions, maybe for good intentions. But that is the drama. We don't need to go visit Senator, what's his name at this point?
Well, at this point, he's emperor because
he's emperor.
They're past chancellor. He's the emperor.
Do you think he's explained his look at this point?
I think he's one needs to question me. So.
Yeah, exactly. What were like other people like? We saw you fighting Yoda in the hall. We have the footage of it.
I also like that there's this little moment, and again, it's just like so exactly. When you look at who's writing these episodes, Stephen Schiff, the Gilroy, if you think of the Americans and political background, it's like they're just taking things from headlines of what happened when there was a financial moment where a dictatorship lost their currency. Well, they just started charging people more for things. They fined them more. They imprisoned them more. And they took more from people to bolster their coffers when they need to make up for the payroll that they just lost. So it's in these responses where the tyranny extends, right? And this is how the tyranny continues to force more and more people more deeply into the desperation that they need to become rebels.
Yeah, absolutely. Like there, it's such a cool look. I think Rebels and Clone Wars kind of had these concepts, but on a much different perspective view of it was more like the Rebels, and it was almost more here's the battles they have to fight to get to where they need to go, literally and metaphorically. And I think this is the first time we're seeing the actual like political bureaucratic landscape playing out in the way that this would happen.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of them doing it. It's elevated. It's a little bit more subtle. It's Clone Wars was a show. I think this has got to be the first time that you can say, and Chris, maybe a big statement here.
Whoa.
This is not Star Wars directed to 12-year-olds. I think 12-year-olds can appreciate it and enjoy it.
No, I agree.
It doesn't feel like it is.
I think they're talking to an older crowd for sure. And I mean, yes, I think you especially see this kind of in the Mon Mothma scenes and things like that, which is, it's more geared towards an adult audience and an audience that kind of recognizes certain family dynamics and things like that. And I think it does harken back to this is not a family show. And I think that could also explain why the Disney promotion has kind of been how it has been. Like we haven't seen the blitz of featurettes and things like that.
There actually have been, Chris. If you hit the Star Wars Facebook page and the Star Wars,
there's like episode recaps.
Actually,
right?
There's been Gilroy and Diego Luna in about like two minute segments talking about things and talking about episodes.
What do I know?
I call it out because I did find it. There
hasn't been this kind of like, ooh, behind the magic, bring your kids kind of thing.
I hope there will be at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the show still has that. And I think that, and it, again, I keep hearkening back to the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy, that the tone of it is almost like the original trilogy, but then there are those moments, though, right, that are the magic moments that as a kid you see where it's like, all right, maybe I didn't understand why Darth Vader was so bad and the round table sitting and all that stuff, but then you have little moments all of a sudden where you're like, oh, wow, this is something, you know what I mean? Like the magic comes in, which I think if the show is worth its weight, and it is already, I think that they're going to hold on to those until they need them.
Yep, absolutely. You've talked about adding the roster of everyone around the table in A New Hope. I would love to see like each of those characters be brought back to life by the time it's done, by like all of the things we're doing and streaming every one of those Imperial officers have all had their moment in the sun.
Give me Danny Rayborn from Netflix's Southern Florida series. Oh my gosh, he's in Rogue One.
Oh yeah, of course you want Ben Mendelsohn to be
Yes,
back.
Yes, but, give me Ben Mendelsohn. Get him in here. Come on. We know why he's not at the table. Let's see a little more of him. That'd be great.
You know what's funny though is I think, you know, we talked about K2SO. How does he fit into this? Krennic, Ben Mendelsohn's Krennic feels like too broad a performance for this show.
You'd almost
have to tamp him down
and
have him be less like he is in Rogue One. In Rogue
That's
One,
true.
It's a very stage performance.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's true. This is true.
Yeah. So
I wonder if he'll meet Cyril in the office.
That would be the two of them are plotting
together.
Yeah,
exactly. He's like, hey, man, this sucks. Yeah, this sucks. Yeah.
Well, I wanted real quick a couple of things. I want to say production designer we gave a huge shout out to. I also sent like location scout and where they're finding some of these locations that they're then amplifying to make like Star Wars and Coruscant. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all great too. But let's dive into Mon Mothma's part of this episode. She gets a lot, and she comes in pretty hot against our boy Luthen, which it's interesting, kind of like how we're talking about Andor and how Cassian is selfish and uncertain about his involvement in the rebellion. Here she is uncertain about what she wants to have happen when she's supporting the rebellion efforts. And it's almost like, who do you agree with? Do you agree with Mon Mothma or do you agree with Luthen? Because I came into it like, well, I don't understand. Why would she not be happy that this took place? Why would she be upset that there's this now open, kind of rebel war moments that are happening? And Luthen is like, these are the necessary things to be. And what do you expect we're going to be doing with your money? I just found that really interesting. And I'm excited to see more of that developed. And honestly, I'm more interested in watching that scene again, because I feel like I really want to get a better understanding of where her character was coming from. Because she really does seem in shock that they would openly attack the Imperials.
Yeah. I mean, it's so she's still like, she's like a proper senator, right? And so she can't quite endorse like this kind of rogue violence that she now knows that it's happening. And so she's conflicted internally, even though she knows like the net result is probably good for the galaxy, but she's not there yet. She's kind of like, I we have to do this through the proper channels, like, you know what I mean? Like, we have to, but I think she's slowly, and I think the actions of the Empire now will slowly show, like, that's no longer a pathway for change. Like, that the Senate is hollowed out, and we've seen that in the prior scenes where it's kind of like there's a few people hanging around. She's talking to like whoever's there. Like it's not a real Senate anymore. And I think she's going to realize that sooner or later.
Yeah, and it's probably, there's a stasis, like, you know, like kind of moment of her being in a state where she can do this, but not, I mean, she's risking things no matter what. But when the dominoes start to fall, she knows that the world that she's known is going to begin to change, that she's started to like probably impact the changes in her own life. Almost like they're now headed into war when they've been talking about it and they've been hinting at it, and she's maybe been pushing for some sort of rebellion, but now it's like actually hitting her, like, okay, now I have to, something to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now it's like, it's become real. Oh my gosh, I can't ever remember his name. The antique. Yes. He is also, he's kind of, there's a neat thing they do with characters here. They have him kind of like on the different poles, and he's like, all right, we're going to do this. And we saw this when she was like about to jump, right? And she's like, I don't know if I can, like, before she pressed go on the whole operation, she like didn't know if she could do it, because she knew that once she does this, there's no going back. And I think like from his perspective, he's kind of like, he knows that once they do this, there's no going back. But then it's almost like this shock from Mon Mothma, who's like, I can't believe you did that. You know there's no going back. And he's elated by that fact. And now she's worried by that fact.
Which Genevieve O'Reilly is doing work in this series in many, many ways.
It's wild. Her, I mean, the actor's, the actor's path. For, you go from a deleted scene, right?
I mean, she was in Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
Momentarily, but there was a much larger deleted scene.
Exactly. So you go from a smaller part to being back in Andor to now this show of almost a main character in this show.
Oh, absolutely a main character.
She's like a third of it. She is a main character.
Like pretty good role in Rogue One. It wasn't just that one scene. Like, she had a little bit more, and I appreciate it.
I mean, she had some authority, and she was moving pieces along in that movie for sure. I mean, just what a cool story, like, just in the background to be like this character who we've all known since was a Jedi, right? To come out.
It was Return of the Jedi. The many Bothans died in Return of the Jedi.
Yes, exactly. I hope she references how she knows these Bothans. I just think it's so cool. I'm so happy for her that she gets to like embrace this character that she like probably spent, who knows, maybe like a few days on set Revenge of the Sith. And now
she was probably like 20? And now here she is, you know, playing this mature senator with all of the machinations of this political world that she's a part of.
It almost reminds me of kind of like the character, the actor arc that old Sheev had, you know, where they kind of call him back after playing this decrepit emperor in the original.
You have to imagine they aged her up in the prequels, probably.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like I want to find the line of dialogue. I don't have it, but I gotta say, I think Mon Mothma is Batman. She's talking about how being the senator is the facade that she wears.
You think she's hiding it?
No. She is. I'm saying, like, she told us. She's essentially and she's telling her childhood friend in the dinner scene or the cocktail party scene about how the version of herself that everyone knows from the Senate. That's not the version that she is. She's not that person. She is doing all the other things behind everyone's back. And it's just interesting to think about it again. Like, it's a description of, you know, what's my real face? The face is the one I wear when I'm wearing the mask. That's my real face. And I just kind of love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I took that as more of a metaphor. Like,
I'm being a bit ridiculous.
I don't see her on the battlefield.
I like to think of her. Yeah. I want to think of her as Batman. I want her to be jumping on rooftops at night.
I love that. I mean, I think that conversation was so well handled too. It did do the TV thing of maybe you shouldn't be having this conversation in this big room of people.
Especially when I was like, when she did start to reveal herself.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were off in the side yet. Like, no, I was like, why are you still in the middle?
And you know what? I don't know how acoustics and people's ears interpret sounds in the Star Wars world. Maybe it's different. Maybe you got to be a foot away. I don't know.
It's a really interesting dynamic. Like, when you think about these worlds where people have to, you know, portray a version of themselves to be able to still survive and then still maybe work within the system to help people, how do they communicate their own dissent? How do they hide it? And how do they find the other people that they can trust? And she has to like very carefully toe the line. It's so interesting. And she has an interesting moment where she's talking about, I learned from Palpatine, I show you the stone of my hand and you miss the knife at your throat, which is like, okay, that's awesome. I mean, like, just a great way to put it.
Yeah, it's again, it goes back to that kind of, there's no turning back once you reveal this information. And so this idea, and this is very, when you just told me that one of the people that wrote for the Americans wrote this episode, it makes sense. That information, the idea that if you have information, that if you reveal it, it's irrevocable, like you can't change it. You can't, there's no going back. And it's such a high stakes game at this point of kind of just who knows what. So it makes total sense that an American writer would be writing this, because that's most of the show was like, who can we tell? Who can't we? Oh, if we tell them, well, you know what happens. So I feel like they played this scene so well from that respect.
Which, why not bring the wigs with you? You know, if you're coming from the Americans, bring the wigs. Bring the mustaches, the facial hair.
I mean, I would love to see... Well, we already got Carrie Russell in Star Wars.
That's true. But I don't think they did justice to Carrie Russell in Star Wars. Carrie Russell needed a better role. She should have had a role in this.
Yes, exactly. This would have been awesome. Yeah. Bring them both back. The husband-wife duo. I can't remember his name. I'm terrible. In case the listeners don't realize, I'm terrible with names. Both character names and actor names, just they don't exist in my brain. They exist on the screen.
It's very funny to me because like I'm very good about it usually, and I love the Americans, and I thought Matthew Reese would just roll off the tongue.
But I had
to look it up because
wow.
But
you
I
did
usually
that.
I
you
love
did that
Matthew
really
Reese.
Well too. I didn't even
well,
I didn't,
I may have I had the Americans just sitting here.
Oh, you're just watching it as we I forgot. You usually watch it as we do the pod.
I watch everything. I never stop.
you have one of the many different screens on in the background.
What I do, Chris, is I record podcasts while I watch things while other people watch me. That's just full circle.
It's interesting.
Yeah, no one's watching me that I know. Probably watching me. I don't know. But I just love that entire interaction. If I could live in that in a scene of this show, I'd live in the back and forth between the two of them, and in her delivery of, if they think I'm an irritation, then they won't find out what I'm really doing, and then the reaction from her counterpart of like, what are you really doing? Like I love all of that. And the purpose, again, it's not a purpose of I'm getting weapons, I'm doing all of this because then we're going to have a huge expansive explosion warfare. It's I'm gaining money. I need money to fund what we're doing to help the rebellion, to make this all a possibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, to have her husband creeping his way into it, the worlds that she's lived in where she has to keep up these appearances with potential people of danger as close to her as possible.
I mean, she has a family. And that's going to be something very difficult to navigate, I'm sure, for her as it goes through.
Yeah. Well, I think they've done well by her. I want more of her, and we'll see what happens with Mon Mothma.
More Mon Mothma. Say that
going
three times
forward.
Fast.
Yeah. More Mon Mothma. More Mon Mothma. Other things, real quickly, we saw Vel, and then I can't remember... Luthen's assistant is the one who goes to meet Vel. I don't remember what her name is, but she's wearing that very stark, beautiful red hood that she's walking through the streets of Coruscant.
That just seems to be Coruscant, I guess, Coruscant day wear.
Chris, do you think we can get a couple of those for us?
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems nice. Yeah, I think we need to dress like that. If we're going to be in the future, which we're getting there, we need to start dressing like this.
Look, we're recording this on Back to the Future Day, October 21.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
Why don't we dress like that? Why don't I have exactly. the lace-up Nikes that I use?
Yeah, I want self-tying shoes, which I guess is just Velcro, but we got there. That scene was interesting because we got to see kind of past the point of the hospital from that other planet where Andor kills the other guy. So...
Wait, what do you mean? You saw the point? Oh, yeah, past the point. Yeah, I got your saying.
Yeah, so we get to see what she did. So apparently they're all still hanging around. They're all in the area. In my mind, I thought they were going to get out of Dodge and just stay away for longer.
Well, it's clear that they need to get the money. Yeah. They need to get all the payroll.
As our hairy-footed hobbits say, the closest place, the safest place to danger is right near it.
Yeah.
and we took that lesson from also the Millennium Falcon when Han Solo pinned himself to the Star Destroyer.
The underside of the Star Destroyer. Yeah. Well, so Vel is trying to not only figure out how to get the funds back to Luthen, but also she's inquiring about Cinta and wondering where she is and if they've heard anything. They know nothing so far. And so I don't think that we're done with Vel and Cinta.
No.
I'm excited about that because I think we're going to see more. Even the challenge is obviously of her getting off Aldani, which it's got to be very difficult. But even
it's
though
not
she's,
be
she's
easy.
Making her effort,
I like that little makeshift speeder.
Yeah, that was cool.
Little scooter thing down the mountain.
Yeah,
let's
I
turn
like that a lot.
She should turn the light off as she goes down the hill.
Yeah,
it's probably hard for her to see.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, maybe you don't need to actually show where you're going.
Yeah, exactly. Let's turn the light off. But I guess she needs to see where she's going. It makes sense.
Yeah, but we get Cassian back on Ferrix, and he's trying to get to Marva, get her off the planet with him. He does, you know, go see Bix, learn about what happened to our good boy Tim with the double M's. And you know, you kind of get the sense it feels like he wants to ask Bix to go with him, but she's not interested.
This scene,
And then before we kind of get to that moment of Marva not wanting to go with him and talking about how she's ready to take on the fight and stay.
Yeah.
He's trying to avoid stormtroopers on Ferrix, and we get that brief flashback. And
Did
we know that the other person who had helped him or taken him from Canary was named Clem? Did we know that ahead of time? I don't know.
We knew that. So I knew that because I looked up the IMDb. That was the fact I put on the chain. I said, I looked up something. Now I realize there's someone else named Clem. I did not know his name or agent, but then I realized that he was basically probably a character connected in some way. So it wasn't a made up name. It was someone he saw fighting for what they believed in.
Yep. And clearly was a person, probably a father figure to him, very close personal relationship. But I like that they cut to Andor at his current age, as if he's back in that moment before you then see him at his youth. And then it's just the clone troopers. You know, there's just a moment where Clem's trying to slow people down, stop them from doing anything.
Yeah.
And then he's the one who ends up taking the brunt of it and being hung for it. And then then you find out more about how he was hung in the square. And that's why Marva's avoided it. They all avoid that one place because of that.
And she said, devastating. After, And then she started walking through it.
Yeah. Which after because of her inspiration from
She
was inspired by what Cassian did that he won't tell her about.
Back to the kind of the start of it, that the hope is there again, and it wasn't there. It was all depressing before. Yeah, I mean that's really powerful storytelling, just visually and just kind of what you're hearing to kind of move stuff along rather than her just saying, "You inspired me." Oh, I was sad. You know what I mean? Like they're showing us and telling us in a way that's very emotional and actually adding some skin to the game.
Yeah, and they also cross cut in that scene where they show she's talking about, if those heroes can be brave enough to take on a whole Imperial garrison, then I'm brave enough to take on things here. And they cross cut to Cassian as a kid trying to go take on a whole group of four stormtroopers.
Yeah,
and we don't really see the result of that. But it again, it's like she's speaking about who he is at multiple times of his life. And that's informing, again, who we believe him to be, even if he doesn't believe in it himself yet.
Right.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, he's going back to those moments. Either he's trying to block that kind of stuff out, and he knows it's there, and he's just like, this is not me, but he knows it is. He knows it is, and we keep seeing it is. Until we get to the new planet, Island Paradise, which, again, let's build a Galaxy's Edge there.
I would gladly see a Galaxy's Edge there.
Also, amazing music in that scene.
There's like the love of the internet already is on
such
music.
Such a cool song.
And I got to
see
ask,
him. This is kind of his Skyfall intro, right?
I was going to say, is it Skyfall intro, or it's also his Jason Bourne hiding from the world intro?
Yes, exactly. He's kind of just hanging around in Island Paradise. I was waiting for him to drink some shout out Sam, James Bond. Hey, and we got Batman. We did all three.
We did it. Everybody.
Hey, there
Bingo.
You go. But yeah, I was waiting for him to drink a little blue milk and have a scorpion on his.
Flip it down and cover it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I might be jumping to conclusions here, but like, this is the first time that maybe one of our characters has paid for the company of a woman.
I mean, I think it's a first for Star Wars. It goes back to the, this is not a family show.
Like, because, you know, we don't know if there's been much of a time jump, but he's got all the money. Yeah. He's hiding on his own. And, you know, here he is.
His hiding place. I was like, can that stuff get wet? Like, what?
Is that like, the best place for it? Well, it is.
Exactly.
It is a bunch of credits that are, you know.
Right.
They're just gold.
They did a good job, like, visually showing that how he, like, placed it up there, then the dividing wall. I was just like, did she see this? Is this, what is this? Yeah.
But once again, I'm looking at, like, even the room that they created here. I mean, take that guy, Luke Hall, the production designer.
Yeah.
Hire him full-time Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
Keep him on staff for everything you're doing.
Yeah. Because
I want this look. Like, that shower, it looks real and functional while still Star Wars.
Yes, absolutely.
How do you do that? How do you make that happen?
Yeah. He's got the eye. He knows the continuation of the look.
But so then we gonna, speaking of James Bond again, after, Cassian's on his way, he just wants to go down to the market to pick something up.
Oh, and that was very, very funny that she's like, his problems when he was with the mother figure, Marva, when he was with there, it was so intense, right? And then she like, he goes back and he's just like kind of living out his days on this island, like doing whatever he wants. Like, I've got all the money. I can do whatever I want now. And her concern is to make sure they have a certain type of snack. And it's like the problems relative to all the other problems become so trivial.
Yep.
I thought that was like, they nailed it where it's like, you chose to be oblivious, right? Like these are the little things that you deal with now.
Yep.
Like this is your main problem of the day because you chose this.
Yeah.
And then
we get the shore trooper questioning him and then the reveal of K2SO or a K2SO droid. But it's the walk up the beach. Is a little bit of James Bond-esque.
A little bit of James coming
out of the water.
Exactly. Yes. Oh,
but he's
James.
carrying two like dissidents with him.
Yes.
Cassian's just saying he's a tourist. He's not. He wasn't running. Yep. Wasn't doing anything.
Yep.
And then it's we know that the reprogramming from K2SO takes a lot. Like this is pretty violent.
I love the accidental literal order.
Hold him there. Yeah.
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 There's some little nice lines, the things that could hang around, like even though it's totally minor, but you know, you're part of it. But part of it. There's no what to be said in there.
Exactly. And it's like the irony there that he is actually part of it. but they don't know yet.
In this moment, mentally he's not. He's not part of it. But this action is going to put him back into it.
Yeah. He's gonna have to get out somehow. I mean, what is it, 6 years, they said?
6 years. So then he goes in and he's just stopped for no reason other than, you know, in a lot of ways you could say it was walking around while being of a different background, of being diverse, a person of color, and he's just taken in. And rather than having his case even heard, it's, oh, no, we've just upped the penalty for this, and it's not 4 months, it's 6 years.
Yeah. And it is clear the officials, they don't care. The judge doesn't care. Like,
none of them care.
Now they're stay in your lane and you'll be fine. And that's now the world the world we're seeing.
Part of what we've always you always talk about is the idea of good people not doing anything to stop it as well. And it's so as many people who are just willing to let something pass because it's not affecting them.
Yep.
Is what leads to worse and worse times. And you know,
let that be a lesson.
That's why, I mean, unfortunately, it does take, it's going to clearly take Cassian having something hurt him again to fully dive in. But this is what we're going to see, and he's going to have to find his way to break out.
Yeah. How will he get out of this one?
Chris, last thing we have before we wrap up this episode is the scene between Dedra and her nemesis, Bliven, where the two of them are going back and forth. Dedra went out of her way to find more information about what was going on with the rebels and on Ferrix and what they had taken from the naval shipyard. She does something that is technically not within the rules of her role, but she uses, oh, this extra emergency act gave me the right to do this. And then she steps on the toes of the other officer, Bliven. And it's kind of this moment. Is the major going to side with her? Is she going to lose her entire rank? Or is she going to have the other side of it? And the result is that Shida takes over the territory and they listen to her. However, he warns her immediately that you have a target on your back. Like, just to watch your back because of this.
Yeah.
You're not going to get away with this.
There's this kind of throw you into like the wolf's den, snake pit kind of thing going on there where it's like, oh, like all of them are kind of skeptical of each other and all of them don't know what who they can trust or anything. Like there's no, it's not a very good company culture, I'd say.
Chris, I think if that's a, you know, company culture we've seen still existing in this world today.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're in that culture, you probably want to get out of it.
We even get that little kind of reprieve from the main boss guy there where he's kind of like, he's like, yeah, watch your back. And that's not, that's not a boost of confidence. That's more like, we don't know who's good, we don't know who's bad, and we don't know up from down here. So this is all kind of new territory. No, I think that is great. I mean, I tend to think they're doing a great job because I can't tell what the motivations of either of them are, truly.
I mean, I do feel like, I think we know that Dedra is, she feels like she's the only one who's really seeing what the rebels are doing. And she feels like she has the answer. She has the way to slow them down. And whereas,
or does she have the way to be close to them?
Well, maybe we might see more. You're right, but she does seem to have a fierce anger and hatred for what they're doing.
It's possible.
Yeah,
but I feel like they might. I think they're like trying to. I think they're doing a little sleight of hand here.
We'll
think
see.
She wants control. I think she wants control of the situation.
Yeah, I don't
because if
I,
she
I
has
do,
control
I do
of
I
the
love...
situation, then. Yeah.
I don't know, she Chris. I think we're just seeing full Empire. I don't think she's.
Yeah.
I don't think
yeah,
she's.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. It's possible. I'm just throwing out
but
theories here.
It'll be a fun thing to watch.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it
for
be
sure.
interesting to see all these characters who are getting a real focal point that they keep running into the problems of the Empire that it turns and radicalizes them? So even Cyril is like completely bought in, but maybe he then sees the atrocities and sees how it's affecting him and he decides to join the rebellion. And maybe Dedra sees the folly and the hubris of the Empire and she sees and she's like, no, I want to be a part of a different side of this too, because they're never going to listen to people like me. I don't know.
Right. Really I feel like with Cyril, we're going to get, maybe there might be a scene where he's pitted against his mother. he's going to have to send his mom to jail.
Yeah.
And then he might be like, here we go.
I think he might be like, gladly, goodbye, mom.
Yeah, yeah. And, I think that's it. Yeah.
I love the turn where Bliven is trying to set it up and say, what if all of our officers were just as loose with the rules as you are? And then Major's like, you're absolutely right. Where would we be if all of our officers took on the same endeavor as Supervisor did? And like her shock and awe of like, wait, what? But you said I was right?
Yeah. I kind of liked like, oh, we're doing this now, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay.
It was great.
Now's the place?
I loved all of those interactions. I loved every bit of it. And this is such a fulfilling episode, despite not having the same kind of things we had in the last episode.
Yeah, I mean, before we started chatting, Mike, I said, like, not a lot happened, but now as we're going through it, everything happened.
Everything.
The gears of change are in motion, and it's great.
I think this is a taste of K2SO. I don't think we're going to get all of the transition of K. I mean, obviously, the next episode's got to be about him escaping, and I don't think he's going to be able to, like, on the fly, reprogram K2 to help him escape.
Yeah, unless there's something that we know or like he shuts him down and he drags him with him. You know what I mean? Steals a ship and he's on it or something. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, I really love this episode. I don't think we give enough credit. Fiona Shaw's performance was really spectacular as Marva. I was feeling every bit of emotion. I'm so glad that her moments in this were not just the first three episodes, that they continue to have 100% more with her. And I hope we get to see her taking part in the rebellion even more, because maybe he's done at Ferrix. I don't know if he'll get back, but this is so
I hope she leads the revolution there, right? Lead the rebellion there.
Let's do a bottle episode of her taking down everybody on Ferrix.
Yeah, come on.
Chris, I think we covered almost everything in that episode. I really love talking about it right now. I would gladly go for another hour on this. I think, you know, maybe one day we'll invite some of the top droid listeners to watch an episode with us.
Oh, I like that. That sounds fun. Yeah, I mean, but until that day, what you can do is like, rate, review us on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcast from.
And
you can
don't
email
forget
us.
R2D2. You're gonna if you there's rate a, and review a, us on iTunes.
There you go.
You've
official
got a great
offer.
Shot.
Lego
it's coming.
R2-D2.
We will ship it to you free, like $160 value.
I'm looking at it now. It's about a 1/6 scale. I'll say it.
Yeah.
I'll say it.
Oh,
officially.
Is it about it? So your Falcon will match up really well with it?
Yeah, exactly. The Lego Falcon I have in the basement. It's perfect.
Chris, so, any chances you're going as an Andor character for Halloween?
I mean, I already am. I don't know what that means.
You know, if I could go as any Andor character for Halloween, it'd probably be Skeen.
Skeen?
Or Luthen. Luthen's just, I feel
I
like
I'd say,
really,
I could go
I'd
Luthen.
Feel very good. I'd feel just good walking
off
around
Andor.
Like Luthen.
I'm not that cool.
No,
too
I'm
nervous.
Not that cool either. I can't,
I'd probably,
I can't do it.
Let's be real. I'd probably be Cyril.
You know what, Chris? I'd probably be Cyril as well. Wouldn't a lot of us be Cyril? We're all sitting
Cyril,
in our day-to-day jobs. Oh, man.
Yeah, I know.
Let us know. Are you Cyril, too, out there listening? Are we all
please,
we all the Cyrils?
Write in. Droidspot at
fortunately, none of us have. None of us have mothers Twitter. Like Cyril, as far as I know. we're lucky
great.
In that respect. Well, that is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. For Chris, I am Mike. We'll be back for next week with episode 8 of Andor. What a throw.
Annie? I'm
give me
back.
Some of that club music. I want some of that club beach
I think we're
Star
gonna,
Wars music.
Oh, I didn't mention. I think we're going to see Jar Jar in this.
Wait, That's you my- think we're going to see Jar Jar?
That's my set piece prediction for the series. Wow. We're going to see Jar Jar on course.
You know what we did see? A Gungan shield in Luthen's Antiquities.
There we go.
There's a Gungan
that?
Shield. Could be Jar Jar's. He's coming back for it. It would be, wouldn't it be
back.
Great if there was just a scene for him to come back to get his shield?
He breaks in. Yeah, exactly. We'll see it.
Oh, wow.